Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel shares a story he wrote about Americans' views on international students. I will return with this week's words and their stories. I wrote a story on chicken expressions. They all describe human behaviors. Next, Brian Lynn talks about making batteries from an everyday item. Then, Jonathan Evans talks about inequality in Japan. Susan Shan takes us to Israel. Researchers there have discovered an ancient factory. Keep listening to find out what kind of factory. We will finish with another story from Brian Lynn. This time he talks about coffee. Coffee made by scientists. But first, here is Dan Friedel with the education report.
Jack Lee received his doctorate in science from a major university in the southeastern United States in 2020. The Chinese student said research opportunities remain strong in the U.S., but he planned to continue his work in Germany. Lee told VOA earlier in 2021 that part of his decision was because of the political environment in the U.S. Lee had good reason to feel that way. A recent survey by an education policy group showed Americans are somewhat concerned about too many Chinese students coming to study. The American Council on Education, ACE, talked to 1,000 Americans in the first part of 2021. It found that 43% of the people in the survey said they think international students take away places from American students. In addition, about 40% also said they think some international students are sent by their country to try and steal valuable U.S. intellectual property. When China was used as an example, nearly 50% said it is a widespread problem. Karen Fisher writes about international students for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Fisher said the number of international students coming to the U.S. grew by large numbers in recent years. So international students, especially those from China, became a lot more visible for people who live near colleges.
They had become kind of caught up in the politics of immigration, of the politics of sort of Chinese-American geopolitical conflict. They got caught up in the politics of COVID and school reopening a year ago.
The Institute of International Education's Open Doors report says the number of international students in the U.S. has increased from 764,000 in 2011 to more than 1 million in 2020. In the same period, the number of Chinese students in the U.S. has nearly doubled from 194,000 to 372,000. Sarah Spreitzer is Director of Government Relations for ACE. She helped write the report that came from the survey. She said it was important for ACE to learn how Americans feel about international students. ACE, she said, wanted to know if Americans supported the actions and words of former President Donald Trump and his administration related to international students. If they did, ACE wanted to make suggestions for how the administration of President Joe Biden could make life easier for international students. In July, both Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Education Secretary Miguel Cardona talked to a group of international students at the Education USA Forum. Using video conferencing, Blinken said, "It's strongly in our national interest for the United States to remain the world's top study destination for international students." And Cardona added that international education helped people around the world understand and effectively connect with each other. While neither announced a new policy, Spreitzer said the messages should make a difference to international students currently in the U.S. and those considering coming. Spreitzer added that one of the best things the Biden administration can do to help international students is to send clear messages. She pointed to a program called Optional Practical Training. The program permits international students working on degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math to stay in the U.S. for up to 3 years to continue their training after graduation.
Under the Trump administrations, there had been rumblings that they were going to withdraw the program, which would have been really problematic.
Spreitzer explained, students make long-term decisions about their education and might not come to the U.S. if programs such as optional practical training get taken away. And for students who already were in the middle of their studies, it is difficult to deal with fast policy change. While the Biden administration is more welcoming with international students, Fisher, the higher education writer, said some issues remain. In August, the U.S. welcomed international students, including those from countries under COVID-19 restrictions, back to the U.S. Around the same time, the U.S. government dropped its case against 5 Chinese scientists accused of lying on their visa application. They were accused of hiding their ties to the Chinese military. While the cases may not seem directly related to international students, it can affect their behavior, Fisher added. Spreitzer said she is looking forward to the next Open Doors report. She hopes the numbers will show that international students are interested in coming back to the U.S. "We're very hopeful," Spreitzer said, "that students are receiving that message that we are welcoming, we are open for business, and that the U.S. in general, we support our international students." I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Like many languages, English loves to use animals in expressions. So today, let's talk about chickens. English has several chicken expressions that describe human behavior. For example, if you are an early riser, we might say you wake up with the chickens.
If you are fearful of something, you might be called a chicken. And if you run around in a crazy way or are just very busy, you are said to be running around like a chicken with its head cut off. But today we are going to explore an expression with a little more meaning. Today we talk about our past mistakes and sins, the bad things we have done. We all have them, but the question is, will they come back to haunt us? Will they cause us problems? But what does our past sins have to do with chickens? The answer is found in this expression. Your chickens have come home to roost. For a chicken, to roost means to settle down, for rest or sleep. For us, however, the expression is not at all restful. When our chickens come home to roost, it means our past mistakes or wrongdoings have come back to cause us problems. This happened with a man named Alex. He was very good at one thing, lying. He lied to people at work. He lied to every woman he met. He lied to his neighbors and even to his family. Then one day he got into serious trouble with the police. He was accused of stealing from his workplace. And this time he was not guilty, but no one believed him, and no one came to help. After years of lying to people, his chickens had finally come home to roost. He was on his own. This expression is also used another way. Bad things might happen to you if you wish for bad things to happen to others. When used this way, we say, curses, like chickens, come home to roost. A curse is like a wish for something bad to happen to someone else. Let's say two friends named Karen and Daniel have a falling out, a big fight. Their relationship is really damaged and probably will not be repaired. When telling the story of the fight to his brother, Daniel says, "I hope Karen loses her job, or something else really bad happens to her." Daniel's brother warns him, "You should be careful what you hope for. You know, curses, like chickens, come home to roost." And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. Next, let's hear from Brian Lynn.
Scientists in Estonia say they have found a way to use a soil-like material to produce batteries. The material is peat, a dark substance made of decomposed plants. Peat is widely available in areas across Northern Europe. Researchers from Estonia's Tartu University say they have found a way to use peat in sodium-ion batteries. This kind of battery is one of several new technologies being considered to replace widely used lithium-ion batteries. Lithium-ion batteries power everything from smartphones to computers to electric vehicles. Sodium-ion technology reduces the cost of the battery production process. This is because the batteries contain sodium instead of costly materials such as lithium, cobalt, or nickel. N. Lust is head of the Institute of Chemistry at Tartu University. He told reporters with Reuters news agency that peat doesn't cost anything, really. The battery-making process includes heating the decomposed peat to a high temperature for 2 to 3 hours. The university is seeking government support to finance a small factory in Estonia to test the technology. Peat is commonly found in wet areas known as bogs. It is used by whiskey makers in Scotland. Some northern European countries use the material to fuel factories and homes. It is also added to soil to help plants grow. During the collection process, bogs are drained to mine peat. Trapped carbon dioxide is released into the air. This has raised environmental concerns. But the Estonian scientists say their process uses decomposed peat. This is a waste product of traditional collection methods. It is usually thrown away. Lukas Bednarski is a battery materials expert. He told Reuters that sodium ion batteries using peat will need to prove to be profitable and easily produced in large numbers. In July, China's CATL became the first major automotive battery maker to release a sodium ion battery. Bednarski said, "I think that companies will increasingly try to commercialize the sodium ion battery, especially after the CATL announcement." He added that less powerful sodium ion batteries are likely to be used together with lithium ion technology to bring down the overall cost of battery systems. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thank you, Brian. Next, let's hear from Jonathan Evans.
Japan's stock market has increased, and luxury cars are selling well in Tokyo after 8 years of economic growth under Abenomics. Abenomics is the economic policy begun under former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Under the policy, the Japanese government has used government spending and made lending money easier to help the economy. But recent data show that Japan's new wealth is centered in a small part of the population rather than spread widely. New Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has said dealing with that issue is important. Kishida has promised to deal with income inequality, which the coronavirus health crisis has made worse. But he has offered few ideas as to how he will do so. "It's like everyone has become poor," said Masanori Aoki. He owns a small coffee shop in a working-class area of northeast Tokyo. With Abenomics, the finance minister talked about wealth trickling down. But there was no such thing, was there? "Almost nothing," he said. He took a job as a part-time bus driver when the COVID-19 pandemic forced him to temporarily shut down his store. Kimie Kobayashi works at a child care center in Tokyo. She says her wages have not increased for 4 years. She said many who work in the industry have learned that wages rarely increase. "I can't say that my livelihood is getting any better," said Kobayashi. "The government collects tax, but that money isn't used to help people who are really in need. Abenomics failed to create wealth to households through higher wages, data show. In a study by the Organization for Economic Cooperation, Japan's poverty rate is the second highest among G7 nations and ninth highest among OECD countries. That information is based on data available up to 2020. Wages rose just 1.2% from 2012 through 2020, government data showed. Japanese households' average wealth fell by 3.5% from 2014 to 2019. However, another government study showed that the wealthiest 10% saw an increase. Inequality is far more evident in countries such as the United States and Britain. Japan stood around the middle of 39 countries examined by the OECD in 2020. The situation did improve for some in Japan. Manabu Fujisaki recently spent 7 million yen, about $62,000, on a Mercedes-Benz automobile using money made from investing in cryptocurrencies. A cryptocurrency is a form of digital money that is not regulated by a central bank and whose records are stored in an encrypted computer database. Fujisaki said he plans to build a 200 million yen house in Tokyo next year. Department store Takashimaya says there is high demand for Patek Philippe watches that cost more than 10 million yen. And Alfa Romeo vehicle sales from April to September more than doubled from sales in 2020. Sales of other imported vehicles like Ferrari, Jaguar, and Maserati also increased, industry data showed. Takahiro Koikei runs the department store Isetan. He said, "We're seeing a clear rise in demand for luxury goods among the new rich." By new rich, he means newly wealthy young businessmen and other high earners. Kishida hopes to narrow the wealth disparity by forming what he calls a new type of capitalism. That includes higher wages for public health and medical workers and tax breaks to businesses that raise pay. Shigeto Nagai is an economist at Oxford Economics. He said offering short-term tax breaks is not likely to influence businesses to raise wages. Instead, Nagai suggests reforms in areas such as Japan's strict labor system. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. Now we have a story from Susan Shand.
Israeli scientists say they have found a huge winemaking factory that is about 1,500 years old. The archaeologists discovered the factory in the central town of Jaffna. It includes 5 wine presses, storage areas, kilns for making clay containers, and tens of thousands of wine jugs and pieces of clay, they say. Israel's Antiquities Authority said the discovery shows that Jaffna was a great winemaking area during the Byzantine period. Researchers estimate the factory could have produced some 2 million liters of wine a year. Antiquities officials said the factory was uncovered over the past 2 years. John Seligman was one of the leaders of the dig, or excavation. He said the wine made in the area was known as Gaza wine. The product was exported to many places. This was a prestige wine, a light white wine, and it was taken to many, many countries around the Mediterranean, Seligman said. The jugs made at the factory were known as Gaza jars. The containers have been found in other countries, including Egypt, Turkey, and Greece. Seligman said wine was not just used for enjoyment in ancient times. He said this was a major source of nutrition, and this was a safe drink because the water was often contaminated, so they could drink wine safely. I'm Susan Shand.
Thanks, Susan. Finally, we finish our show today with Brian Lynn.
Finnish researchers say they have produced coffee in a laboratory that smells and tastes very similar to the real thing. The team reports that lab-grown coffee could be important as climate change continues to threaten traditional coffee farming. Scientists at Finland's VTT Technical Research Center created cell cultures from the leaves of coffee plants. The process involves floating the cell cultures in bioreactors filled with nutrients. The same method is used to make other kinds of animal and plant-based products. Heikki Aisala is a VTT researcher who oversaw the process. Aisala told Reuters news agency that cups of the cellular coffee probably would not pass taste tests comparing it to traditional coffee. Not like, of course, 100%. It tastes like a combination of different types of coffees, Aisala said. The researcher added that while the cellular coffee is not ready for the market just yet, it certainly does resemble coffee at the moment. Aisala added it is possible that the lab-grown version could one day develop into a multi-billion-dollar industry. VTT research team leader Heiko Rischer said cell cultures offer a more sustainable way to make coffee. This is because coffee is in high demand. This has led to countries opening up more land to grow coffee beans, which causes increased deforestation. Rischer said the environmental benefits of lab-grown coffee include reduced use of pesticides and fertilizer and less need to ship coffee beans long distances to markets. In Europe, lab-grown coffee would need to be approved before it could be marketed. But an important question remains: will coffee lovers actually drink the lab-grown creation? A Reuters reporter put that question to Satu, a server in a Helsinki coffee shop. I think someday we're going that way because of all the natural coffee sources vanishing, she said. So we have to move along. If it tastes good and the aroma is coffee-based, so why not? I think it's possible. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks again, Brian. And that's our show for today. Some content in this program was provided by the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.